And now, AM 650 presents Dotto Tech with Steve Dotto,
the show committed to helping you get the most out of your technology.
Now, here's Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to Dotto Tech. I'm Steve Dotto. Glad you could join us this fine evening. We've got a great show lined up for today. We've got a viewer's choice show. We asked you last week what you wanted to see coming up on, or hear, should I say, coming up on the show. Gave you a whole bunch of, I think, really excellent choices, talking about GPSs and Facebook and online dating. And you chose ebooks. So we've got a fascinating conversation coming up a little bit later about the whole world of ebooks. We're also going to be taking a look at using your flat panel, your TV at the center of your home entertainment device. We're also going to spend some time talking about remotes. Some of us have six, seven, eight. How many remotes you got, Art?
Two.
What kind of sad system do you got?
I know. I don't have a lot of money. If I had a lot of money, I would probably have six.
It seems to you'd probably have six. I hope you said that.
It's also because I've lost about two of them. So I probably have about four, but I used to.
Well, we'll be having a quick conversation about what remote works best if you need to unify your remotes. We're going to start talking about some mobility solutions. Choosing a plan. You know, when you go to pick your first phone or when you go to renew your plan, choosing the plan can be a little bit confusing. We're gonna cut through some of that clutter for you on FitTech, outfitting your office gym. Because you got, have you outfit your office gym at home yet, Art?
Oh, there's no office gym here. There's running out to your car to plug the meter,
yeah,
or something like that. That's about the office gym we have here.
We'll be covering maybe some ideas that they can input. Put in place right here at Astral Radio.
Let's hope the boss is listening. Yeah, that'd be great.
They do listen. At least that's what I hear. They tell me they listen. I have no actual confirmation that they do listen because they've never talked to me about the actual content of the show, but they say, we listen. On Mac Tech, we're going to be talking about iOS 4 and hotspotting, which it doesn't sound fascinating, but trust me, you'll be happy you listen, especially for your Mac person and FaceTime. So many cool things with FaceTime. And the rest of the world, well, it's just too bad. You have to use Skype. It's not as good. It's not as cool. And, you know, I was looking at the news, and the one thing that struck me today was the Scott Simpson, a writer for the Vancouver Sun, came up with a story today about researchers finding that multitasking is difficult for older workers. Is this ground-shaking information? How old are you, Art?
I'm 34.
You're 34. Can you multitask now the way that you did?
The way that I did, well, I guess with this job, and sometimes if you watch me, I'm like an octopus.
Yeah, you're like an octopus, but do you actually think that you're on top of things when you're multitasking? Do you feel comfortable multitasking?
There are times when I'm like, uh-oh, I forgot to do something. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, as opposed to maybe 5 years ago.
I think that with the advent of so many technologies that take our attention, that it's becoming more and more an issue because we expect to be able to multitask. I know I used to be able to. I used to be able to watch, you know, when I was a kid, I could watch TV and do my homework at the same time. And, you know, now kids today, you know, what are they doing? They're texting, they're Facebooking, they're watching TV. No, they're not watching TV. They're watching something on YouTube and they're doing their homework at the same time. But as we have so many distractions in the office, I can remember when I was doing the TV show, we'd always be having meetings and my computer screen in front of me would be like a siren song drawing me in. And I would think that I could listen to what was going on in the meeting, but I would totally lose focus. And you know where this becomes a big issue in business? Is BlackBerries.
Mm.
Is you're sitting in a meeting and somebody's sitting away on the CrackBerry just pounding away on their BlackBerry, not paying attention to what's going on. And it's not only counterproductive, but it there's actually a rudeness to it that we really haven't kind of gotten on top of yet as a business culture. And so maybe that's something that we can all kind of promise that we'll do now in the future is not no more black art. Put down the phone and pay attention.
No, but I can always use the excuse that I'm working.
Yeah,
come on, Steve, I'm working. I'm not texting to find out who my date is tonight. I'm working. Give me a break.
Yeah, well, that's because we didn't do the online dating story. So you're gonna have to wait at least a couple of weeks for the online dating story. How many times did you vote?
I don't know. I don't even want to say.
Okay. Some of the other little stories that I was following that I thought were pretty interesting is how geolocation, there's a story which you're going to post on the blog about how geolocation is going to revolutionize our world. Do you know what geolocation is?
No, I don't.
You're assuming something, but I won't put you on the spot too much.
Thank you.
Geolocation is where, based on the coordinates of your cell phone, they know where you are.
I was kind of thinking kind of a Big Brother-y thing.
And it's creepy.
Mm-hmm.
It's creepy on one level, but on another level, incredibly powerful. And we're starting to see social applications like Foursquare and stuff that work on this premise where you can basically opt in and you can let your friends know that you're in an area, which is cool. Like if you've got an hour to kill and you're downtown in Kits and you can look and see which ones of your friends are in the area. That's kind of cool, kind of creepy, kind of cool. But then there's all these advertising opportunities attached, especially when you say, you know, it's lunchtime, you know, who's got pizza? And then you just look for pizza, and based on your geolocation, a whole bunch of people fire coupons off at you, to you. So there can be a benefit, but at the same time, do you really want that information being shared? It's an interesting conundrum that we're going to face as a culture, because if you opt in, if you know all of the ramifications, you're probably comfortable with it. But if you don't know all of the ramifications, if they're doing it without you really knowing what's going on, or you're concerned about how they're going to use that information – it's not something that's going to fly quite as easily. It's not something that we're going to solve in any short period of time, but it's a conversation we'll be having on a regular basis.
Sometimes you don't want to be found.
Alan Lowe is the buyer of the AV Systems Department for London Drugs. Alan, thanks for coming in. I got a question for you. More and more, when we think about our home theater system, it all starts with our flat panel. We don't even call it a TV anymore, do we?
No, we've emerged and gone to flat panel completely now.
Yeah, it really struck me a couple of years ago when I was assembling my media room, how much everything basically just revolved around, I guess, calling it the hub of the entire home entertainment system. That used to be kind of the job of the stereo, didn't it?
Well, the stereo and the computer in two separate rooms. Now what they're trying to do with all the connectivity they're adding to these panels is they're trying to keep people in effect, away from their computers and letting them access their social media and the internet through their TV.
And that's the thing. It's, you know, when we talk about it being the hub of our entertainment, you know, of course, all of the – your sound system for your TV is now the best – it's your stereo. It's the best sound system in the house. And all of your DVDs play through there. And now we use it as a huge photo frame playing all your photos through. But it's when we start not even connecting our computer to it, but using some of the functionality of these new TVs to do the internet-based applications, the social media, as you say, that's where it's a game changer.
It's completely what's gone on is especially the younger generation, and you and I, of course, are getting a little long in the tooth.
Mm.
But the kids today don't like to sit and watch TV by itself. They've got their smartphone going, or they got their laptop going. They're checking their Facebook page. They're doing something on YouTube, and now they can do that on a corner of the screen of the TV while they're watching the movie. And that's the whole idea, is to keep people focused on that main entertainment system.
So when you go to shop for a panel today, when you start seeing some of these additional functionality, what should we be looking for?
What you need to look for is something that's going to fit with your lifestyle. Some manufacturers have a very basic internet connectivity, being just their own proprietary websites that are linked to perhaps YouTube or a few other things.
Netflix would be an example.
Netflix,
looking
exactly.
For that. In this case, you just access your account, and so you're in a fairly closed internet experience.
Exactly. Whereas some of the manufacturers now have got wide open browsing. You can go right to Google. You can do whatever you want. Most manufacturers now are members of DLNA, are you familiar with?
No, I'm not.
Dynamic Living Network Association. So that's where you can stream all of your media.
Mm-hmm.
From your computer directly to your TV. So you've got your 6,000 or 7,000 images on your computer from your last vacation.
Now, a lot of people think that this is probably kind of frivolous in order to have Facebook running at the same time as you're watching TV. But the media is starting to meld together, and there's going to be some viewer benefit to having access to your social media sites as you move ahead. I know some of the stations now and some of the services, for instance, the ones where you're working with your iPad, if you're on the fan site tracking a different program, it'll actually be sampling the audio so it knows what episode you're listening to, and it can bring up ancillary information that's germane to what you're watching. And one would think that there will be other activities that they'll start to layer on as it moves along.
Exactly, and they're actually sampling some of the programming you're watching now. Your smart TV will now recommend certain programming based on your viewing habits.
If you like, and when you consider what's happening with the cable world just exploding, you can't possibly keep up on all the good television that's coming out. So if you do watch a series that you're enjoying and engaged in, having something recommended to you might be welcome.
Especially when you look at how compressed we are for free time now, to have something that will do some of the research for you and save you the time of looking for something else you might enjoy can be actually just great to have.
What about input and output, or input really? Do we need a keyboard attached, or is it just the fact that it accesses your account enough to add these extra layers of entertainment to the experience?
Again, the keyboard can be very good if you're starting to use it for surfing the web, because you're going to want to be able to type in easily.
Mm-hmm.
Samsung, for instance, has a remote with a QWERTY keyboard on the back of it this year. It's a standard handheld remote on one side. You flip it over the other way.
Okay.
And it becomes a QWERTY keyboard.
And it's a thumb-sized one? That's okay.
It'd be the size of a standard television remote, so it's quite easy to use.
Oh.
And it has a gyroscope in it, so it knows how you're holding it and what section of the remote to activate.
You know, when the computer guy says, oh my, you know that technology just moves at a pace that we just can't keep up with. So next time you're shopping for a TV, you're not just shopping for a TV or a flat panel. You're shopping for an internet browsing entertainment hub to your entertainment universe.
You are looking for something that your whole family can enjoy doing many different things all at the same time.
Alan Lowe is the buyer for the AV Systems at London Drugs. Thank you.
The show committed to helping you get the most out of your technology. This is Dotto Tech with Steve Dotto on all-time favorites AM 650. Now here's Steve Dotto.
Alan Lowe is the buyer for the Audio Video Systems Group at London Drugs. Alan, remote controls are running amok through much of Canada. And you're actually a kind of a remote control junkie.
Well, that might be a little bit strong, but I am a big proponent of a proper remote control for a system. There's nothing worse than bringing home a great audio-video system, putting it into your house, and you being the only person that can work it, because you don't mind picking up six different remotes.
And, you know, you say that can be a problem. Sometimes that's an advantage, because then if you're master of the remote, you're master of the TV. But we do need Lord of the Rings happening. We need one remote to master them all. And there's really, it seems to me, in the consumer space, only one product that kind of has risen to the top of the heap. That's the Logitech series. Are they the only ones that have really kind of risen above the rest in consumer space?
In consumer space, the Logitech Harmonies are probably the one who has taken over the best. They've developed a programming system that is so easy that anybody who is slightly computer friendly can program their own remote. And that's the main thing, is how easy can you make it, and how faultless can you make it run?
And therein lies the challenge, I think, for a lot of people is I think a lot of people think if you choose a unified remote, set it up properly, that it answers all the questions. But it doesn't. It only answers some of the questions. You still have to be willing to dive in there sometimes and to make it work properly. Because the problem is devices being turned on and off. And if somebody hasn't turned a device off properly, or they haven't given the remote time to do it, because people think it's all instant because they're used to instant response from the remote. But when you're using a unified remote, it goes through a whole series of commands. Is it sequentially goes and turns, powers things on and off. So if the dog walks in front when something's being powered on, it might not get powered on. That's where a lot of people lose it. And once they lose it with that, it's not like they can just pick up the appropriate remote if they happen to know and fix it. Now they've suddenly got to work their way through the navigation system in the one remote.
Yeah. The interesting thing is if they pick up their own remote or the remote for that device, they're going to make it worse. The way these devices are programmed, they have a help function. And what you're experiencing there is what happens when a remote gets out of sync.
Yes.
So it thinks that one device is on and it's not. And that happens, as you say, by somebody walking in front of it. When you consider that it may be executing 6 or 8 or 10 or 15 commands for a macro. Mm-hmm. So a macro is what they call it when it's turning on your TV, turning on your satellite box, your DVD, and your audio system.
And then setting the proper inputs, and then all of those sorts of things that it has to do. It has to do each one for each device. That's a lot of commands.
It's a lot of commands. So if you point it and push that button and then turn the remote away, only half the commands are going to get there, unless you have a radio frequency remote, which is a little bit more expensive, and it sends the commands by radio frequency, and they're then translated into infrared.
You say a little bit more expensive, but you're not really meaning a little bit more expensive, are you?
It would be a little bit more expensive for the same remote that didn't have the radio frequency command.
Okay.
It's about a $100 option for it. But can you get that $100 option on a $50 universal remote? No.
But you can on a $1,500 remote.
No, on a $300.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. $300 to $500 in the consumer end. With something like a Logitech Harmony, you have the ability to get the radio frequency.
They've got the RF. I did not know that they had the RF ones. I thought we had to move up into the ones that were more dedicated in order to make that work.
No, they do have that available in the consumer. Logitech makes two different models, the 900 and the 1100,
okay,
that are radio frequency compatible.
But all of your devices might not be RF compatible. Are all of the TV sets and all of the tuners, are they all RF compatible?
Absolutely not. But the RF receiver has infrared outputs, and it comes with little emitters that you place over the IR receiver on the device. It converts the radio frequency command to IR and sends it to that device.
Okay.
So it doesn't know that you're running radio frequency. It's getting an IR command, but it's far more accurate in the fact that you don't have to point the remote at the system. Or if you want to have your system behind closed doors, you can do that as well.
What's your threshold for an appropriate number of remotes to have to handle?
One.
You're at one. Do you think that, what about for the average person? Do you think that if they just have two devices that it's worth going to a single unified remote, or is it three?
It would depend on your demographic. How many people do you have in the house? How many want to use the system?
In what's their technical clarity?
And do you want them to enjoy it or not? I understand you liking to be the owner of the system, the holder of the remotes, and in charge, but there's nothing worse than getting the nasty phone call while you're at work because nobody can watch TV.
Yeah, it's one thing when you're in the den. It's another thing when you're on the road or in the office or at the hockey game and nobody can watch TV, and then you're the bad guy when you come home. So it's as far as the choices go out there, Logitech seems to be the way to go, unless you're willing to go into the full dedicated system, which is an order of magnitude more investment, and you've got to really do a lot more research.
For the standard consumer, the Logitech is probably the easiest and best way to go because it's so user-friendly in its programming and how it works. For the people that are into the major theaters and want to integrate control for lighting, mm-hmm, for instance, or
oh, you can expand
HVAC,
it into your,
you can go as far you as you want.
Yeah.
Then you get into the heavier systems like RTI, Crestron, AMX, things like that.
And it's amazing what you can do. I mean, being able to log onto your house from somewhere far away and turn on the furnace, turn down the heat, turn on lights. It's an amazing power.
Yeah, a lot of people really go for them for summer homes or weekend cottages. So when you get to your cottage, it's not 40 below in there. It's all toasty and warm, but you haven't wasted all the power because you turned it on an hour before you left home.
Isn't that something? And the one last piece of advice that I think we should give people is trust the help function on the remote.
That is what will get your remote back in sync if something's out. You only want to pick up your normal remote or the remote that came with the device if you're going into some menu settings or things like that. As a rule, you want to put them away. Don't have them anywhere that anybody can reach them, or you'll be out of sync all the time.
That's right. You've all got a drink from the
one
same
remote
cup.
To rule them all.
One remote to rule them all. Alan Lowe from London Drugs, thank you for that remote advice.
My pleasure.
It's time for Wireless Tech, and joining me in studio is Alwyn Hsu, the Director of Sales for Wireless, etc. Alwyn, thanks for coming in.
Thanks. Great to be here.
It is. It's great for you to be here for us because I have so many questions. It's funny. The thing that I probably receive the most questions about at parties, and I do receive a lot of questions that irritate the heck out of me, but this one doesn't irritate me as much, but this is BlackBerry or iPhone, Steve, what should I be getting? And what type of package, you know, what's the best value for me? And so I want to spend a few minutes with you today talking about best packages. How do people choose a package?
Sure. That's you know what? It's a great debate because there are so many different packages out there. And really, for each individual user, there's a different one that suits them the best.
But basically, when you go to buy a phone or when you go to engage in a relationship with a carrier, there's one of two ways. There's a very short-term relationship and there's a much longer-term relationship.
Yeah, exactly. You're talking about the difference between a postpaid plan and a prepaid plan. And postpaid, you know, typically is going to deliver the best value. But prepaid gives you the flexibility that at any time you can drop off.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's really dependent on what the user is looking to do.
Okay, so let's talk about prepaid plans. That's a tough one to say. Prepaid plans for a moment. And basically, those are just, you basically just pre-purchase a phone and a certain amount of airtime or a certain amount of services. And do you have a limited amount of time that you have to use those within?
Well, you're exactly right. You buy a phone and then you buy airtime vouchers. And depending on the airtime voucher that you purchase, it could have an expiration date anywhere from 15 days up to 1 year.
Okay.
So, you know, a couple of the carriers that we carry, they have a $100 card that's good for 1 year's worth of time. But if you use up the time at any point, you're going to have to buy another card and refill.
You're going to have to buy another card and refill. And is it, I've never had a prepaid phone. Is it pretty good at letting you know where you are in your plan, how much time you have left?
There's always ways that you can dial in and check your balance on the by dialing a number.
Okay. And is this, for a lot of people, I guess if they have an existing phone and they aren't quite ready while they're in research mode, sometimes a prepaid card will bridge the time between their short-term commitment and their long-term commitment getting into the new system.
Sure. You know, typically what we find is the people going on prepaid are either truly emergency users, guys who, you know, do not use their phone to talk on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're buying a phone for your child and it's their first phone and you want to control usage so that they don't go crazy and rack up $1,000 worth of bills.
And another one, travelers. I think that's a great – when people go on vacation, I'll say just buy a prepaid card wherever you are and use that while you're there, more for emergency than anything, but at least you have it then and you're not paying those roaming rates, which can be quite onerous at times. So let's talk now about the full-on plans, about choosing a plan. And in 3 years still seems to be that kind of threshold that they want a three-year relationship with me, don't they?
Well, it really depends. Nowadays, what you're finding is a lot of the carriers, if you're going to just get a voice phone, just a phone for talking, there are a lot of two-year options out there.
Okay.
But if you're talking about iPhone or BlackBerry, you're going to be looking at a three-year relationship with a carrier.
I don't believe I've ever looked at anything that's just voice and talking. I think I've always looked at something a little bit more robust.
Sure. You know, and quite honestly, the reason why they do that is, you know, the iPhones and the BlackBerries that you're seeing out there, you're seeing them priced between, you know, anywhere from $49 to $200.
Mm-hmm.
But those phones cost $600-$700.
Yeah, if you try and buy them retail.
To buy them outright.
Yeah.
So what they're doing is they're saying, okay, come and work, you know, stay with us for 3 years and we'll give you a better price on the hardware.
So when somebody comes to you and says, what should I be getting? What sort of a phone and plan should I be getting? Obviously, the phone debate is something that we'll talk about at another point. But
sure.
When choosing the plan, what do you have a checklist that you like to go through with your friends?
Yeah, well, you know, you first start off just saying, how many minutes are you going to be using and when are you going to be using it?
Which for a lot of us is a lot less now. As you get more literate with the technology available, texting becomes so much more prevalent.
Sure.
And also even things like FaceTime with the iPhone, but when you're in Wi-Fi contact as opposed to using your minutes.
Yeah.
So you might use less minutes talking than you think.
You may, but you know, really what you're seeing is a movement towards plans with lots and lots of minutes.
Okay.
So, you know, you see unlimited plans out there.
Yeah.
And when I say unlimited, I'm not saying just unlimited in the evenings and weekends. You also have unlimited options during the day as well now. So, you know, basically you're not and no longer tethered to saying I can only use a phone for so long.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing to consider is who do you talk to?
Exactly.
Because with the My 5 and some of them even have My 10 options, as you start to look at your different options, your favorite numbers of people that you talk to all the time, your kids, your significant other, the people that you're always on the phone with, if there's a very small list because you have a limited number of friends, as do I, all of a sudden, if you just put them in, you don't really need – you can go with other options, getting much more data and other things perhaps.
Yeah, for sure. I have family members who, you know, they call just other family members. And yeah, My 10, if you just call 10 people, by that plan, you'll never have to worry about spending any additional charges.
Because it's the surprise bill when you've gone over in the month that makes everybody sit up and take notice, as opposed to the ongoing. Once it's in the budget and it's there and it's flowing through, it's part of the process, but it's that surprise. How did I use that much, that many minutes?
Well, I totally agree. And that's why we you know, we like to have consumers come and talk to our staff, because we can look at their bills and say, you know, you're on this plan, you're paying $80 a month, and the only reason why you're paying that much is because you're on the wrong plan. We get you on the right plan, we could get you down to maybe $35, $40 a month.
And that's the thing about you guys is you're network agnostic. You have so many different carriers that you represent that your people are trained to help us choose the right carrier, the right plan, without just following one religion.
Yeah, and for one thing that we love to say to people is just that: come see us. We're not going to fit you into just one plan. We're going to find the best one for you. Whether, you know, with us, we have Rogers, Bell, Virgin, Solo, and Fido. We have the choice for you. Come in and we'll get you the best one for you.
So next weekend when you're doing that big shop, what do? You grab your bill, you grab your phone, and you drop by
Costco,
wireless, et cetera, inside the Costco's. And instead of looking at all, while your significant other's shopping for clothes or meat, you can be shopping for minutes.
Exactly. You know, and we find that we have a great customer base there. We just want more people to know to come by, because we can save you money.
Okay. Alwin Hsu is a director of sales, wireless, et cetera. I'm Steve Dotto. One of the topics that you let us know you were interested in us covering on the show was Facebook. And we didn't cover Facebook this week, but we promise we will be covering a Facebook 101 in the next few weeks to come. But, you know, Facebook, even if you're not sure about Facebook, there's a safe place to start on Facebook. You can come and you can become a fan of Dottotech. I love that term. I love how Facebook puts the word fan page on the pages that kind of relate to everything outward facing like our show here, but we have to call it a fan page because that's what Facebook does.
I like how it's fully interactive.
It's nice. You know, it's a simple place. If you sign up and click like, just like Sally Field wanted everybody to do, you like me. But if you click like on the Dottotech Facebook fan page, which is at facebook.com/Dottotech, couldn't be easier. It puts us into your feed, which means that whenever we post what's coming up in the show, or if we have any information about the show, it ends up kind of nice and subtly just in the feed of different things that you follow. So you're going to see about your new niece being born, and you're going to see about your buddy. You're going to find out that your buddy had a muffin for breakfast. And then it's going to say coming up this week on Dottotech will appear once a week in your Facebook feed. And it's a nice, gentle way for us to stay in touch with you. And if you do have a comment that you want to share kind of publicly with the entire Dottotech community, then you can post a comment there as well. And so please drop by our Facebook fan page if you are so inclined. Click like, and we here at Dottotech appreciate it oh so much.
I liked you.
Thank you.
FitTech is brought to you by Fit for Work, leaders in corporate health and wellness programs. Your fitness is our job.
We are back on Dottotech. Joining me now, PJ Wren from Fit for Work, our fitness expert. And one of the nastinesses of technology is how much it tends to affect our health. I know personally my eyes, I constantly have pain in my head because I spend too much time looking at the screen. I won't mention all the other places. But trying to pull myself away from the computer and from all this technology is a challenge for all of us.
Yep.
I want to know what the best pieces of gear are, because I want some technology. The best pieces of gear that a company can invest in, or even an individual can invest in, that's gonna give them the most bang for their buck.
The most bang for, well, right now, the hottest thing in the market, and it's actually been out for about 5 years, is a TRX. So, sorry, Steve, it's not really technology-driven. It's still body-driven, so you don't plug it in or anything.
You don't plug it in?
Yeah, sorry.
There's no electricity?
Yeah, no, you don't need to recharge it or anything.
That doesn't sound very
good. I know, but, you know, you'll get over it. But it's a great piece of equipment, and I've done up a few videos. What it is it's two straps that either hang from the ceiling or a door frame, and the whole idea is it's functional training. So instead of doing a traditional, say, chest press, like you do in the gym on a machine where just your chest muscles are isolated. Here, you do it in the air somewhat. So now your core's engaged, back muscles engage. It's more of a functional activity. So I always tell my clients you get more bang for your fitness buck with something like that. And, you can take it. I've taken it from 9-year-olds all the way to clients with MS. So you can do a broad range of
Now, how much
fitness.
Does it cost? What are they worth?
They're about $120 to $140.
Oh, so really not a very big investment
at all. Not a huge
investment. But what about setting up space? Do they require a lot of space to work with?
Yeah, you need about 6 foot. Yeah,
a 6
radius.
Foot space.
Radius.
And then that's the simplest piece of gear called the TRX.
TRX. And I've got a link to on the blog, on the website, onto TRX, as well as a few exercises for the desk jockey specific with the TRX.
I appreciate that that's the best value, but what's the coolest thing?
The coolest?
I mean, what about the App Cruncher, the Thighmaster?
Yeah.
Any of those?
No.
You know treadmills any good?
Treadmills are fantastic. And we've got a lot of companies that bring us in to outfit their gym. And treadmill, because it's something everyone does, right? Walking. Okay. Treadmills, ellipticals, recumbent bikes, those are sort of your go-to cardio pieces of equipment.
Stairmaster?
Stairmaster, I love. A lot of people don't like it, though, and it's also not very knee-friendly. So, if you want to go with a couple key pieces, I would say treadmill, elliptical. If you got an even larger budget, you can then sort of go into the weight room aspect of it, buy a cable machine, some free weights, some mats, and you've got yourself fully set up at an on-site work gym.
I think if I was going to recommend a single piece of fitness equipment for any office, I'd recommend a massage table.
A massage, I was about to say that, or you nap time, right?
All the details on these products and more on PJ's blog on our website. Thanks for coming in, PJ.
Thank you, Steve.
Brought to you by Fit for Work, making sluggish workplaces into invigorated workplaces. Visit us online at www.fitforwork.ca. DottoTech, the show committed to helping you get the most out of your technology on AM 650. Now, here's Steve Dotto.
I can be anything. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
Last week, we asked you the question of what topic you wanted most on DottoTech and upcoming shows, and we gave you some amazing options. Internet dating, which Art Factora really was basically stuffing.
That's what I voted for.
Stuffing the ballot box. You stuffed the ballot box, and it was frankly beneath you. But the other big, the Facebook 101, got lots of votes, but the number one vote getter, ebook readers. And we listen to our audience, don't we, Art?
Always.
Always.
We have to.
We have to listen to our audience. And so I went on a search finding the best ebook reader guest. So I went looking at blog sites, reading them. There's a variety of good ones out there. There's a variety of not too good ones. And I wrote to several of the people who basically manage these sites. And the one that I found, goodereader.com, really liked the content, wrote the guest. He agreed to come on the show. That he said, well, you know, but what time is it going to be? Because I'm like a West Coast dude. And I said, oh, well, we're West Coast time. He goes, good, because I'm in Vancouver. How did that work out for us? Pretty well, because we have Michael Kozlowski in here, who is the editor. You call yourself the editor?
Yeah, editor-in-chief.
Editor-in-chief. There you go, chief. Of goodereader.com, a wonderful resource for everything relating to the world of ebook readers. And it's good for beginners, but it's also good for people that are right into the minutiae of the industry.
Yeah, it's true. You know, we have something for everybody, whether you're new to the ebook readers or whether you're a seasoned veteran, we have something for everybody.
Okay. Well, I think where we need to start with our audience is we're going to start at the very beginning, which I understand is a very good place to start, because when you read, you begin with ABC. And
right.
Well, we'll stop now. But we will continue talking about ebook readers. So, Michael, the format of ebook readers, people think they're computers or they're like a tablet PC or they're close to their cell phone. But the underlying technology is profoundly different because of something called e-ink.
Right. E-ink is pretty well the most famous standard. One of the most popular reasons why is because e-readers and e-ink, they don't have the screens having backlit technology, which means unlike your smartphone, your monitor, any type of device that is backlit, like an iPad, for instance, is backlit. So e-readers are very easy on the eyes because it provides a high degree of contrast and saturation. So you could literally read it for hours and not strain your eyes like you would.
Because the image is 100% stable. It's not refreshed over top of a backlit. So, the benefits don't just extend to the fact it's comfortable on your eyes. It's incredibly thin because you don't need any light source behind it. Mm-hmm. And the biggest benefit is battery life.
Yeah, the battery life on most e-readers are astounding, such as the Amazon Kindle. You can literally have it in standby mode for 2 or 3 months, and it not drain the battery. So you can literally read it for hours and hours and not decrease the battery life at all.
Because when it's on and displaying, as soon as it displays that image, then it stops using power. It's just it doesn't use any power at all when it's not actually turning a page and loading something new into its memory. Am I correct?
Yeah, that's totally right. One popular sort of thing about the e-readers in general is that the good ones, they turn pages very fast. So despite the fact that they are e-ink, that it's the closest experience that you can have to actually reading a book on an electronic device.
Well, this was the thing that most people who are interested or intrigued by it, it's their stop point, is this romantic attachment we have to the paper and the structure of the book. And also the control we have, the fact that we can leaf forward, leaf back, and all of that control that we have over it. And people don't want to give that up. And that, I think that's one of the biggest reasons that people are reticent to step into the ebook world. But it's not the same experience, but it has a lot in, it has a lot of favorable comparisons to reading a real book.
It's true. And not only that, but it's also the cost factor as well. If you look at traditionally a hardcover book that comes out, especially by a quality author, it's anywhere between $30 and $50, mm-hmm. where if you buy the ebook version, you're only spending about $10 or $12 at the most. So for people that really have they're very interested in reading and they do read a lot of books, e-readers are the perfect way to be able to buy more books more often and foster your love of reading.
And the convenience factor is amazing. When you consider going away on a trip when most of us find time to finally read, the fact that you can take one e-book reader and all of your books mm-hmm. and it with a battery that will last for the entire 2 weeks of your holiday, even if you're reading all the time, it's a tremendous convenience factor.
You're quite right. And most people take their e-reader on holidays mainly because to invest in an e-reader is not very – you're not investing a lot of money. You're looking at maybe anywhere between $110 to about $140.
Yeah.
So people feel most comfortable reading around the pool. It's not like bringing your iPad on a pool where it's a $500, $600 device and you're very, very – you know, you have a lot of trepidation in
– Well, not only that, you can't read your iPad by the pool because you can't see the screen because it's the because of the glare. Whereas with the ebook reader, it reads just fine in the brightest sunlight that you can experience, just as a regular book does. That is a powerful factor as well.
And that's the big selling point behind e-readers is that – you can be in direct light, whether it's sunlight or overhead lights, and you will not get any screen glare like you would with an LCD-based device.
One of the other – we'll talk about some of the formats and some of the models in our next segment. But let's talk now about some of the other things that stop people from stepping into the world of ebook readers. And one of them is the concern about the technical literacy that they need, the fact that they, you know, you might want to connect it to your computer in order to download the books and that whole process of syncing to a computer. I think that the ebook market made a real large step forward when Wi-Fi became pretty much the standard. So people don't really need to use their computer and their computer account in order to purchase and load books anymore.
Right. You can do everything right on the device. One of the big evolutionary steps with e-readers over the course of about the last year or two was the Wi-Fi becoming, like you said, a lot more prevalent in our society. Mm-hmm. And so e-readers now all have Wi-Fi and you could set up your account, buy books, and not only books, but you can also take out subscriptions to magazines and newspapers as well, all on one device. So you don't really even need a computer or a laptop. You can do everything on the one device, which makes it a little bit more intuitive to be able to wrap your head around if you're a non-technophile.
Which opens the door for so many more questions, which is what sort of interface is the best? Is the ones with a small keyboard attached or the ones that simply navigate through with a directional pad? What about color? Because the color is always going to be an issue. What about using other devices maybe as the ebook reader, such as the iPad? We will answer probably not all of these questions today, but we will answer more when Dottotech returns. I know as you're driving along, you can't write down all of the URLs of the different websites that we talk about here on the show. You only have to remember one, dottotech.com. If you drop by our website, we have blogs that cover each and every story that we cover, as well as all of the links contained within those stories are on the site. So you can always find all of the ancillary information about the topics we talk about just by visiting the website. And you should visit it anyways, because there's additional stories that might not make it on air, as well as we have a poll up that you can get some input into the show. You can contact us through the website. Oh, it's a jolly place. And people are known to just basically enjoy themselves for hours on end, just navigating their way through saying, gosh, this is such a wonderful site. I feel at home at this site, or at least I do because I built it. Do you visit it, Art?
It's beautiful. I'm on it right now.
Yeah, you are. I can see it up there, and there I am.
It's all encompassing.
It's all encompassing. It's a labor of love. So if you don't visit it, it's almost like insulting the cook. So drop by dottotech.com. let us know what you think and ask any questions. Michael Kozlowski is the editor-in-chief of GoodEReader.com, our guest today speaking about the world of ebook readers. Let's get right down into the what device is the best. What's the best ebook reader, Michael?
I would probably say for your money, the Amazon Kindle Wi-Fi is probably one of the best investments. It retails for about $139 and it does ship to Canada. So you can order it online from Amazon and they ship all over Canada, the U.S.
You're not becoming a second-class citizen having to deal with Amazon for the for purchasing the ebooks and all those sorts of things. It's not a concern.
One of the things about dealing with Amazon is that if you do buy an Amazon e-reader, you are locked into exclusively buying your books from Amazon.
Okay.
So Amazon is pretty well the industry leading juggernaut as far as a store that has the most number of ebooks, big name authors signed and things like that. They dominate the market. So
if somebody does, though, have the technical clarity to use an application like Calibre or something like that, would they be able to access their Kindle through that application, or is it really locked down?
Well, what you can actually do is if you, say, download ebooks from Project Gutenberg or free books that you can just download online, you can use a third-party ebook management software suites that will allow you to convert industry standard formats from one format to another, and one of those formats is the Kindle format. So you can have the freedom as well to load in your own books.
So you're not locked down completely, but as far as the ease of use purchasing from the store, it's only from Amazon if you do choose the Kindle.
That's correct.
Now, what about some of the other options out there? Because I took a good hard look at the Barnes & Noble Nook a little while back, but I got the feeling that it being a Canadian, it might not be as convenient a product for me.
It's true. Barnes & Noble does not even ship their e-readers through their website or any of the stores in the U.S. That carry the model in their retail locations. They don't actually ship it to Canada. So the only way that you can get a Barnes & Noble Nook in Canada is if you order it from eBay or other third-party websites. So it makes, even though the technology itself is very sound, it makes it a little bit harder for Canadians to actually be able to utilize that great technology.
And with other good options out there, it just makes it not a good option.
It's true.
It can be a good reader, but the other ones are good as well. We do have a pretty much all Canadian offering as well, which I think does probably dominate the landscape here in Canada, which is, of course, the Kobo Reader, which is available through Chapters as well. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, the Kobo e-reader, the second generation one, is probably the best one to invest in. And Kobo actually discontinued their original e-reader because it didn't have Wi-Fi. So like you mentioned, that it involved a lot of hoop jumping with syncing with your computer, and a lot of people found who bought the e-reader that it was too complicated of a process. So Kobo released a Wi-Fi e-reader last year, and it's very successful in Canada, not just because it's sold Canada-wide at Indigo and Chapters, but you can also get it at Future Shop. So it's probably the most accessible e-reader to purchase for Canadians. So there's a lot of Canadians that buy it.
And it's the one that I have, and the reasons that I like it are I feel really comfortable working and dealing with Chapters online and dealing with all, you know, just basically I don't feel like I'm stepping outside of my comfort zone in purchasing from them and in dealing with them. I think that the reader itself might be a little bit limited. I find it a little bit slow as far as it's especially when I'm navigating my way through the menus. And it only has a direction pad, which I find sometimes a little bit frustrating as I work in when you're in kind of maintenance mode, when you're navigating your way through and, say, having to log on to a Wi-Fi network or something like that. And I notice the Kindle that you've got does have a small keyboard. Does that make a big difference?
It does, especially when you're navigating menus. And that's the main reason why that you would use sort of the omnidirectional pad that the Kindle has over the sort of D-pad that the Kobo e-reader has. The Kobo e-reader, it is a solid reader, although it is a little bit flimsy. It does feel a little bit plasticky. The overall experience for just reading books on it is pretty solid.
I've got no complaints as far as – I mean, I'm not unhappy with it. I wouldn't want to say that. But when I'm reading, I'm not unhappy with it. When I'm managing it, I sometimes go, but that's – a tiny fraction of the time.
Exactly. And one of the benefits of dealing with Kobo is that they have applications for all major platforms. So if you buy a book on your Kobo e-reader, you can read that same book on your BlackBerry, yes, on your Apple device, on your PC. So that one book can be read across multiple different platforms.
Yeah, on your iPad, mm-hmm, which is a great option as well. Do we have that option with the Kindle?
Yes. Almost all major companies have a multitude of applications from that will run on everything from iOS to Android to basically every major platform. So whether you buy a book from Amazon, say, you could read it on your Kindle, and then you could pick up exactly where you left off on your BlackBerry when you're at work and you don't have your e-reader accessible.
In the navigation, or sorry, the menuing system and the bookmarking system will actually respect across your different devices where you're reading? How does it do that?
Yes. It's just because of the way that the Wi-Fi syncs your book, and the way that you leave your book off will, mm-hmm, sort of carry over to the other applications because they all sort of sync to like a central server. So,
well, that's tremendously convenient because you're probably not going to want to read all the time on your BlackBerry, but you might have 20 minutes where an appointment is late or something like that and you want to just read your book. That's a great option. We've talked a lot about books, but you did tease us a little bit talking about magazines and newspapers. My concern on that front is, especially for magazines, I'm not sure I want to read all my magazines in black and white. I like the pictures.
Yes, and that's a lot of people share your sentiment about that. Magazines sort of lose a little bit of their charm when you're not able to see the full color.
Mm-hmm.
But newspapers really shine because newspapers inherently are almost black and white almost exclusively. So, mm-hmm, the transition between newspapers and an electronic reader, it's less of a transitionary, mm-hmm, period with it. So you can definitely not really lose a lot between the tangible copy of the newspaper and a digital version of the newspaper.
But we would be remiss if we didn't say that there are color ebook readers available. Now, who are the leaders in that space?
Well, color e-reading technology is really a new thing, and there really isn't any companies that are marketing an e-ink color-based technology yet. There is a company, the leading company in China called Hanvon, mm-hmm, which is going to be coming out with a color e-reader this summer. And when we were at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, we actually got a chance to see it. And the refresh rate and the whole experience with color technology was actually faster and more robust than the black and white e-ink technology.
What about battery life?
The battery life, you didn't really sacrifice a lot with it.
Really?
It utilizes a technology called e-ink Triton, which is the new color e-ink technology. And the reason why you don't see a lot of e-readers yet that have that is because there isn't enough orders for the technology to make it cheap to manufacture.
We have to remember that this is still primarily a book reading platform, and it's going to extend into other areas. It's going to extend into magazines, newspapers, as we said. It's going to extend into education, which we'll have to talk about. That's worth another conversation at another time. But the multi-purpose devices like the iPad might suit better in some of those applications where you're going to want to be doing other things as well. And that might end up being the divining point between the two technologies.
It's true. Many people use the iPad for reading color magazines and even children's books because, mm-hmm, you lose a little bit of the charm when you read a children's book in black and white rather than being full color.
Yes.
And the Apple iPad is a good e-reader, more or less, because it does display animations in books. It could display audio content in books. So it's personal preference.
Well, but you're also only reading a children's book for 10 or 15 minutes before your child goes to bed.
Right.
You're not going to read it for hours. And I find holding an iPad for hours far too heavy. And so that's where it falls off the table as far as that's concerned. You know, we could go on for hours. If you need more information, goodereader.com is the source. There'll be a link on our site. Michael Kozlowski is my guest, and you're going to have to come back soon. Are you going to come back soon?
I sure will.
Thanks so much. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Mac Tech, brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Welcome back to Dotto Tech. I'm Steve Dotto, and joining me in studio now, Chris Miller, for a little bit of Mac Tech. iOS, the now overriding operating system that's on all of these Apple gizmos and gadgets and devices, and they're up to 4.3.
One.
Okay. So they just keep rocking along. What's new? What should we be looking for in this new iOS?
Well, the big shiny, the big deal is hotspotting.
Okay.
You used to only be able to do this on jailbroken phones, so pretty much nobody knew about it. But what it allows you to do is you take your 3G connection, your connection to your cellular network, and retransmit it through your Wi-Fi, allowing any of your other devices that be Wi-Fi only, i.e. your iPad, iPod Touch, or laptop, to work off your 3G device without a physical connection and without a rocket stick.
Now, that I used to do on my BlackBerry doing something called tethering.
Yeah.
And this is the exact same process. And it's huge as far as people who just need occasional access, especially on their notebook. You're on the road. You don't want to pay those exorbitant fees in the hotel for network access just to check your email. You know, quite often they'll charge you like $14 mm-hmm. for your... And all I want to do is check my email on my notebook. So now it allows me to use my data plan on my iPhone in order to gain access to check my email.
Yeah, it connects up to a few devices, and with no physical connection, no cables required. So you can put your phone on the desk, put it on the other side, and you rock and roll.
So in this particular case, we're using Wi-Fi as the connection, not Bluetooth or any of the other networking standards. Okay, so is it easy to set up?
Pretty simple. You just go into your settings, turn hotspot on. It creates a network that you can name to be whatever you like. You can put a password on it or not. Just it acts very much like a really low-powered router.
So people are going to come up with some creative applications for this. I can see people sitting on an airplane playing network games now. Of course, the airlines might not appreciate it.
The couple ways that I've seen it really used well is for real estate guys,
mm-hmm.
Folks who are out there doing contracts on the road, full transmission on the road, and full networking from their car. What they can do is grab their phone, set up a little hotspot right in their car. They now have a fully active network. So if they have a network printer sitting in their trunk and they have an iPad that somebody's signing away a contract on, they can finish an entire deal fully internet, fully emailed, with all the paperwork completed without ever going home, without going to an office.
So your phone becomes just this mini router,
yeah.
that basically gives you access, all your devices, access to each other, and access to the web.
All that, and it can play music too.
That is iOS 4.3.1. And you just download it onto your device. You'll be prompted if you've got any of the Apple devices that are prompting you all the time. Do you want to upgrade? Say yes.
Do it.
Just say yes. Chris Miller from MacStation, thank you.
Thank you.
MacTech is brought to you by MacStation, your environmentally friendly solution. Trade up to the newest technology. Save taxes on the new machine. Give a second life to your old Mac. MacStation, who said business and pleasure don't mix? App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Welcome back to Dotto Tech. So, friend of mine's daughter goes to Mexico, no cell service, but they have Wi-Fi service. Her daughter gets to Mexico. Within a few minutes, she's talking FaceTime to mom. Mom knows she's okay. Chris Miller from MacStation joins me. Let's talk FaceTime.
FaceTime is cool.
FaceTime is cooler than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
Because it works so well. They've really done some Mojo compression stuff on this.
Now, the software is just fantastic, and especially the way that it interfaces with all of your devices. My single favorite part of the entire one is, let's say all you have in terms of FaceTime machines is a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
You got a MacBook sitting in front of you, like so many people do. And I want to FaceTime call you, and you don't have that app active. If I call the email address that you have attached with your FaceTime account, it activates the program on your computer for you and starts ringing, just like Skype would or anything else.
So it
just
reaches out and touches you.
Does a little bit.
Let's get the bad news out of the way first, because all our Windows listeners are right now going, what about us? Can we have FaceTime too?
I'm afraid not. You got to come to our side.
You got to come to the Mac side. And do you anticipate FaceTime will be available in Windows anytime soon?
Well, I tell you what, the last time me and Steve had a conversation about it, he didn't bring it up.
He didn't bring it up. And, you know, with some of these apps like this that are way out cool, Apple doesn't try and bring them across. They don't see the value in bringing them across. We never saw the previous Apple Chat application move across into Windows. People could kludge it in some ways, mm-hmm. but it never worked. So if you are lucky enough to live in a Mac universe, FaceTime it works on all of your applications over Wi-Fi networks. It can also work over.
It's still limited on 3G. I believe that still has to do with the amount of data compression going around.
And I'm not sure you'd want to use it for that anyways. But if you are in a hybrid world, you can get some of the same functionality out of using Skype and using the video on Skype.
Yeah, if you have an iPod Touch, a current iPod Touch, it'll work just fine on that. I mean, almost everybody's kid seems to have that. If you have a MacBook, if somebody's got an iPhone, you're good?
Yeah, you're good to go with Skype. But if you have your choice, FaceTime, the quality of video, that much better.
Oh, yeah.
Quality of audio, that much better.
Oh, yeah.
Cool factor, that much more.
Oh, yeah.
FaceTime. FaceTime, FaceTime. Chris Miller from MacStation. Drop by our website. Check out his blog. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation. Book a one-on-one training with our Apple specialists or sign up for one of our free workshops. Get the most out of your Mac with MacStation.
So I think our first experiment by having a poll on the website worked out pretty well, Art.
I think we know what our audience wants.
Yeah, they wanted the ebook reader. And so we're going to have another poll this week.
And
I think I want to ask if you got an ebook reader or not, or if you're going to get one.
What do you think? That makes sense.
Do you have one?
I don't have one.
Are you going to vote?
I will. I'm not a huge book guy, and it's horrible, and it's embarrassing when I tell people that because, you know, being a comic and doing work in radio, you would assume that I was well read because I don't know. I kind of come off as a smartish guy, but I'm not a big reader. I don't know why. I think it's the. I'm the magazine, internet world.
It's your generation. It's your attention span, I think.
Absolutely.
It might come down to the attention span. Not that I'm not trying to fix things for you, but maybe you should slow down a bit.
Well, I think this ebook might be the way because I don't have room in my place for all the books. Maybe an ebook would be the answer.
It might be. And here's the thing that we didn't discuss, which we're going to have to talk next time Michael's on. It's not an either or. You know, you can have book – as soon as you buy an ebook reader, I think some people think, as soon as they buy an ebook reader, they are now – it is forbidden for you to buy any paperback book or hardcover book again because you've now chosen the blue pill as opposed to the green pill, right? It's not an either or. You can still have regular books.
Well, I've got book friends who live and die by the smell of those books.
Yeah.
And they would never imagine purchasing an ebook.
Yeah. Well, that's their choice, and so they should enter the poll too. So we're going to ask, will you buy an ebook reader? You got one already? Or yes, I will buy one. You're not sure? Or there are going to be people that say, no choice, no chance. I just do not like the idea. It goes against every grain. I hate them.
I'm leaning towards yes.
So if you hate them, you can say no chance. That would be the proper response. Now, next week on the show, looking at stories. I like the GPS story. Not as many people voted for the whole GPS for summer travel story, but I've been doing some research and I've got a great guest lined up, I think, for next week. So we're going to be talking about, have you ever seen the Backroads map books, people?
No.
It's a very BC thing, although they're right across the country. They're these great books that have all of the logging roads and the hidden little lakes and stuff like that. And I use them a lot for fishing. And they've got a product that you can load into your GPS, which gives you access to all of those back roads places, all the logging roads, all of the boat launches, all of the lakes that you can't find on the regular map. And so you can use your GPS just like a street GPS to get there. And people think, well, this is great for if you're fishing, Steve, and you know if you're into that. But you know where this is amazing? Is we've all had, especially when you were younger, we're all meeting at this campground up at Alice Lake or something. And then you work all day and then you're driving up at night and you're trying to find your way back in the forest roads or in the less well-marked and certainly not lit roads at 10 o'clock at night. And you never know where you are and space completely gets lost. Your GPS should take you right there. It's a great concept.
GPS saved me a couple of weeks ago when I was down in Seattle. I go down to Seattle 3-4 times a year. So I kind of think that I know where I'm going. Mm-hmm. But I went to a comedy club in Bellevue. I thought I knew where I was heading. I ended up probably about 15 minutes away from where I was supposed to be just because of the roads. And I had the GPS. And it's one of those things, as a guy, you don't want to ask because you don't want to be that, I got to go to a gas station. And you know where the girl? And like, oh, geez. But when you got the GPS, it's the best of both worlds, right? Because you got you got the answer to where it's supposed to be and a cool toy.
There is a double-edged sword to that, though. When you walk in, I was giving a talk once at a place in Victoria. And it was late night, or it was a dark night. And I know Victoria pretty well. Mm-hmm. And as I walked into this talk, I realized I was exactly where I was supposed to be, but I had no idea where I was. I didn't know whether it was north of the city, south, east, or west of the city. And it's what we give up. It's the technology is neither good nor bad, but you have to understand what you're giving up. So you still have to, you still should go into Google Maps or go into an atlas or into a roadmap and take a look. So physically, you know the general area you are, just in case the technology fails. So you can know if you need to go north, south, east, or west in order to find your way back home.
Valid point.
Valid point. And that is all the time we have for this week's show. Drop by our website. Let us enter the poll. Let us know if there's any other topics you are interested in covering. Of course, the show will be podcast, so all of your friends that weren't fortunate enough to be able to listen to it tonight can listen in the future if you let them know about dottotech.com. I'm Steve Dotto for Art Factora. Thanks for tuning in.